Hello and welcome back to another Radio Roundup from the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, London Marathon on Sunday. It feels like an age ago now, Matt, but loads to talk about. We've got so much to talk about. Obviously, Sawe grabbed all the headlines, but we've got loads more to talk about too. Obviously, the women's race as well, Kjeltsjer, the Brits. Where do you want to start, mate? How's your stretching been going? How have you been doing?
Yeah, well, I haven't had too much time for stretching, actually, mate. I was in Madrid over the weekend commentating on that marathon, which was epic. Not as, I guess, didn't have the headlines of London, but always dramatic in Madrid. The course is undulating and there's not really any paces. And you just get a bunch of, you get 12, 15 men who've all run 208 or quicker, and they just have a right old dust up, and kind of same on the women's side. So it is it does remind me of cross country quite a lot. It's just so much chopping and changing of the lead and men surging. And you've got a lot of guys who are trying to prove themselves as well. And I think it does make for very, very good racing. So if you fancy a challenge and you don't get in the London ballot next year, get yourself to Madrid and get yourself running a real marathon.
Well, everyone's getting into London next year, though, aren't they, mate? It's 2 days.
Look, when you watch London, I mean, I finished up commentating and then had about, I was able to catch the last hour because of the time zone of London, and then watched that first hour back at a later time. But I got to admit, when you watch that on TV, it's untouched, right? It's the best marathon in the world, hands down. The sun was shining. The streets are absolutely lined with millions and millions of people. And you know, the racing is just, you know, it was an absolute spectacle, and obviously it grabbed all the headlines. We saw history, and yeah, I think when you saw it this weekend, you're like, there's no way that's not a 2-day event next year. You know, I think there's going to be so much demand. I mean, how many people want to do London watching that?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure on comms, because we questioned before how they're going to do it, they hinted that it will be a women's elite on a Saturday and then a men's elite on a Sunday as the kicking off of those races, which I think is great as well. Puts real spotlight on those events rather than chopping and changing between the two.
Yeah, I mean, that, to be fair, that's always been one of our pet peeves, is the coverage. And again, like, even this year, the elite women are finishing, and obviously that was a great race in itself, but fuck, the men's race is kicking off, and you know, they're at mile 20 or wherever they're at, and they're starting to really throw things down, and we're missing it. You know, we're missing that play out. And in as well, the elite women finish, we don't get all the excitement after that, then we turn back to the men. So I think in a way, yeah, to have that just exclusive coverage on the elite women and on the elite men on those separate days might actually, and they might kickstart something for other majors. What's to say other majors don't start? They all want more money, and more money comes in more participants.
Yeah, we need 4 split screens, don't we? We need front of the women's race, front of the men's race.
We won't need it anymore.
Front of the Brits and no, I think the British races, well, I think we need our own screen for that.
Yeah.
Do you know what's cool about London as well, I think, is, and I'm sure you were the same, is that it's how many people tune in and watch it or go down and watch. And then, like, when the performances come out, the amount of people that text me about Sawe or
that?
Getting to work on Monday, and they're like, is he doping? Like, was he clean? Like, what do you think of that? As if I know. And yeah, it's cool though, isn't it? That it gets people talking about running. Like, it is just, it's just huge on the calendar. Like, you don't get that in the Olympics. Like, the day after the Olympic 10K final, no one's, well, some people are, but I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, kind of, yeah, everyone's getting excited about it. And I think that's Kipchoge's legacy as well. And I don't think enough people have said that over the weekend for me, in terms of, like, he showed him it was possible. They're the sort of athletes that, yeah, they knew he had all the tech, all the shoes. He had the lights in the cars, but they're not the sort of the athletes that then think, well, he's a different human being. They really kind of believed in,
well, they know him on a personal level, maybe.
Yeah, in him saying no human's limited as well. And I think, like, he really paved the way for that performance, and also for the public's interest in it as well. I do think it's funny that Adidas ended up being the ones to break to after all the money Nike spent, but fair play to both of them.
Well, you know, Nike Kipchoge started this thing, and I think all the other brands are going to finish it. There's a real race on. The amount of money in this sport now because of what Nike and Kipchoge did early on. And you look at, you know, it's not just the shoes, it's the nutrition companies, it's the bloody watch tech companies, it's, you know, it's everything associated with marathon running. How can these companies claim that what they're offering is that extra 1% that that gave Saway the sub 2, that gave Kjelcha the sub 2, and everyone else, electric times, national records, etc. So you're really seeing lots of companies basically benefit from the magic of what these guys do day in, day out in training.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? It's really cool. And yeah, you mentioned Kjelcha as well, and he's, bless him, like his whole career, I think we've already always spoken about how he's always kind of there or thereabouts, done some amazing things, but just can't seem to be the number one guy. Like, how long did his half marathon world record last for? I know he's got that indoor mile record, doesn't he, still, I think. But yeah, he just always seems to be second or third, there or thereabouts. A bit like Kiplimo in a way. I know Kiplimo's had his days, but the two of them just always been second to someone ridiculous.
Yeah, Kiplimo's got his world cross titles and he's kind of unmatched there. But no, that performance summed up Kjelcha, up, you know.
Kjelcha's Andy Murray of running.
No, he's way better than Andy Murray, mate. I mean, that is a terrible... That's offensive to Kjelcha. But no, he is like, you know, we've always loved him for the way he races. And I think he was a quiet favourite for a few people going into this weekend. And look, when I caught up with Mohamed, you know, one of the first things he said was, damn, the coach has to separate Kjelcha and Tola. You know, these boys are just hammering. He was blown away by what Kjelcha was doing. And when I spoke to him a little bit more off air, and he's like, mate, you know, this guy's going to do something silly. Like, you know, he knew, and the way he's training. And I actually think when you're looking at it from a European perspective, when I was doing my Madrid research, five Europeans have broken 206 this year, or was it broke 206 last year, and something over 100 Africans had done that. But when you look at the way they train, and I'm just, how can you replicate it when you've got 30 men, 30 women hammering these long runs and hammering just runs every single day? And, you know, when you're thinking about, you know, these guys are pushing the boundaries when it comes to weekly volume, and we're hearing numbers like 150 mile a week quite regularly. That's kind of what the block's turning into now. And even if you're running 120 mile a week, when you're in these huge groups, it's just so much more manageable. You know, the quality you're getting day in, day out is a lot more achievable, and your perceived effort is going to be down. And of course, you've got all the fueling, you've got everything like this, but, you know, they are being pushed on a regular basis. And, you know, I do sometimes, you know, a lot of Europeans train in ones and twos, and maybe they have a group of five or whatever, but, you know, they're out on these long runs. And yeah, of course, they've, you know, even Mohamed was saying, of course, he's got someone there on the bike and maybe someone in a car and stuff, but it's not the same when you can get the quality day in, day out that these guys are getting. And I think that's obviously they're based at altitude, and, you know, they are, for me, the Africans are applying themselves like they used to apply themselves on the track 20 years ago. They're now applying themselves to the marathon in that same way, because there's so much money, because there's so much excitement, there's so much attention. They can be the face of a brand, you know, all of this stuff. And that's what they're prioritizing. And you've got, you know, as if Guy in Madrid had run 146.800 and he's 3 years ago, and he's just decided, you know what, I'm a marathon runner now, and he's running 208 over a hilly marathon course. And yeah, you know, I'm not saying he's in the same breath as these guys, but it just shows you where they're putting their focus. And, you know, they're not putting that same focus on the track or even across country like they are on the roads now.
But I do think they're more inclined to build like these super groups, if you like, where they have all the best athletes training together.
Yep.
And they're not scared to say, well, I don't want to train with my main competitors. For example, like, look at Georgia Bell and Keeley. I think there's an article came out of them recently about how they managed to stay friends despite actually being the two best middle distance runners in the world, essentially. And I think, like, you think if you did that in the UK and you put all of our best marathon runners in the same group and just said, well, look, you're not all going to make the team, but you're all going to be really good, and you're all going to have a really good chance of actually, whichever two of you make the team,
also, it's not compete. In marathon running, it's the one discipline where it's, look, obviously,
doesn't matter so much, does it? Yeah,
you want to make that Olympic team. You want to call yourself an Olympian, but I tell you what you also want to do is you want to go and make, you know, 30,000-40,000 pounds every major you do. Mm. You know, you want to go cash in at London. You want to cash in at whatever autumn marathon you do. You want to have a big money contract from the shoe brands. Well, chances are you have to go run 2:45. Yeah, it's, you know,
I do think it's a very British thing though, to be really, I guess, like arrogant about your own training in terms of thinking that it's so superior to what other people do or that it's so right for you. Whereas I think the culture elsewhere is more like, well, look, we all kind of know how to train for a marathon and we could just all jump in together and it's the same.
I think Sessman's completely on the ball. You know, he, one of the changes he made and was very public about it was just like, look, drop all the noise, drop all the heart rate crap. I need to just get efficient to 3 minute Ks. And, you know, and he's out there hammering 3 minute Ks. And that's very similar to how, speaking to Muhammad and stuff, that's very similar to how they train. You know, it's like, okay, well, today's a hard 30K long run. Yeah, how hard? Well, that just depends how good everyone else is feeling. You know, and it's just like, start off and, you know, these guys are just racing.
And that's, and they're getting a shed load of miles in.
It does teach them to race. And that's what the marathon's turned into. Now, that was another angle I was going to say, is like the way that, you know, Sawe, Kijeltra, Kiplimo, you know, he's got a 59 flat last half. And the mile splits they're supposedly dropping, the 412, even just like 420s, 430s that they just start throwing down. It's sickening. And
well, they went 13:54, 35 to 40.
There was a 13:42.
Or no, 30 to 35, then 13:42.
Yeah.
35 to 40.
This is what we said though, even at John Career, we were talking after Boston, like, you know, the way that he ran, and we said, you know, it's like moves you would see on the track. Like people just started hammering that last K on the track. It's what we're seeing in the marathon now. Guys aren't blowing up, and you've got to be able to drop the hammer if you're going to get anywhere, you know, if you're basically going to feature. Yeah. But that's a very different story to what we saw from like Paddy, Jack and Muhammad. Like those guys ran, they just ran 3 minute Ks the whole way. It was very even. When you look at their splits, do we have their 5K splits to hand? But they didn't fluctuate. When I looked at their average Ks, it was just like,
yeah, I'll get Jack Rose.
Their average miles were like 447, I think, that, you know, the whole way. I'm just going to get Momo's up because I think he...
Jack Rose, yeah, about 15-minute 5Ks, basically, till his last one, 15:33. But pretty much everything else is within...
Yeah, Muhammad
7 seconds out either way outside of 15 minutes.
Yeah, Muhammad's 5Ks were, 14:53, 15:0, 15:13, 14:52. Don't know what that middle one is because they do the split at halfway, but then 15 minutes, 14:59, 14:50. Yeah, like a small pickup for him. But yeah, they're at the stage where they're like almost, you know, they're just a few years behind being able to like run X pace and then really drop the hammer.
Yeah, and let's talk about that race aspect though, mate, because we were mentioning before that, and like you just said, marathons are changing in that someone at 30K is going to drop a silly 5K. But it's almost no surprise that we had three people break the old record. We had two people go sub two in the same race, because that's why the winners run so quick. Because we had a race at 35K. Previously, someone's dropped a nice split, 30 to 35K, and then they're out on their own. I'm not saying they're not trying and shutting it down, but there's no one to push them. They're not worrying about winning that race, whereas Sawe still had loads to do. He's got Kijeltra breathing down his neck.
It's unbelievable.
And Kiplimo's just down the road for a long time. And so they actually still had to race all the way to the end, and that's what produced the performance, far more than it being one athlete who is just physiologically superior. It was the fact that they actually were still racing with 2K to go at that pace.
Yeah, that's credit to London and the organisers. Like always there's a race. I mean, in the women's race, it's literally coming down to a sprint finish. Like,
yeah. You know, women's race was crazy.
Yeah, like that.
I feel like it's gone under the radar so much because...
No, it has.
Because of how... And rightly so, right? Like two sub two is ridiculous. Like Kiplimo, 2 hours, 28 seconds. Yeah. But the women's race, and we'll get onto in a bit, was phenomenal.
But yeah, you're right. I don't think either of them run, well, definitely Kijeltra doesn't run as quick. Sawe, questionable. Does he run quite as quick as, you know, does he break two if he's all out there on his own?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think he does.
Bloody long way under, mate. 1:59:30. Yeah. But yeah, he might make that initial surge. And then just think, I got this bad boy wrapped up.
They're not shutting down, but I do think there's an element where they would be thinking, I don't want to really blow up here. Whereas they didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Because you know, in your mind, after running that quick 5K, they're thinking, okay, if I go too hard now, I could really like pay the price and be out of this and not win this race. But they didn't have a choice. They had to keep pushing. Because it's like, well, we've just dropped Kiplimo. We're not going to let him back into the fold. So we're not just going to slow down and let another guy come in here. Kajelcha's there still, and he's thinking, well, he's a complete unknown. I don't know how fit he is because it's his first one. He's never been here before. And so he's got to keep going. Yeah, it's interesting listening to Kajelcha. Kajelcha talked about, I'm pretty sure he was like, yeah, I literally got to 41K, felt absolutely fine. And then I was fucked, basically. But I think most people take that in their debut is hitting the wall with a K to go.
Yeah.
Rather than
I do actually think, you know, this performance did make sense a little bit. In a, like when you do look at Sawe is...
I would be more questioning it more if someone's out in front running 159 and they're running 203 behind them.
No, yeah, but I just mean like the caliber of these men. Like Sawe has amazing credentials over the half marathon. I don't think we ever saw him quite run what he was capable of over the half. And he's obviously more of a, you know, he's more of a marathon specialist anyway. I mean, you know, so his conversion is less. But yeah, you know, you've got someone like Kajelcha who's run sub 58 so many times in his career. He's got his 5K, 10K track background, even his, yeah, that mile world record background that he ran. And, you know, for me, like he said in his pre-race press conference, 60 flat is not quick for me. And like I do, you know, yeah, you've run 57 third, like it's not,
you know, it's like, not because and this is no disrespect, look at the Brits, right? Look at Paddy Deva, Jack Rowe,
they've run 60 flat
exactly, and then the difference between them and Kajelcha over half marathon is enormous. But imagine Kajelcha jogging a half marathon with them, yeah, guys, of course, yeah, he's then going to feel all right,
yeah. Like yeah, and there's also a world where you have to remember when these guys, like when Kajelcha runs 57.30 for the half and runs sub 58 and Sawe the same, like they're doing that at the front of a race. Like they do have a pacemaker, but the pacemaker is never with them for long. And, you know, we saw what Kip Limo is capable over the half when the car was a little bit too close, whether that helped him or not, I don't know. But you could see already the benefits. So actually they've run these 57s half marathons, and it's like, what could they actually do if they had a similar scenario of someone running 60 minutes where you're in a group, pacing's good, like all that sort of stuff. So I mean, I personally think Paddy is capable of much quicker over the half.
Yeah,
he'll run 59 low at the back end of this year, I think, and possibly Roe will break 60 as well, just given the nature of their race in New York. But I think there's more that we could see from the top boys over the half as well. And so actually running 2 hours and the half marathon got to such a crazy place that it was only going to be a matter of time before what we did see a two. Easy to say now, it's still an incredible feat.
Yeah, and I think just really cool experience for the Brits as well. Like they've had some great runs, but they've also managed to do it in that race.
For everyone.
In that race.
All 59,000, yeah. I think, very, very special for them.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, let's wrap up some of, I guess, those results. Lower down, we talked about the big three. Peter Lynch of Ireland, 2:06:08, ninth place. Insane run from him. And I know we have a lot of Irish listeners as well, so I'm sure, yeah, you guys will be pleased with that. But Mohammed, 10th place, obviously first Brit, 2:06:14. You called that one, mate, after chatting with him.
Quite pleased with myself. Yeah, he's just someone who's, I think it was the best preparation he's ever had. You know, he was confident. They had a really good group. You know, Jack Rowe was in that group for a long time as well. A guy that we still haven't mentioned, and very, very few people are mentioning, Wayne Gebrselassie. I mean, he's run 2:06:50. Was it 59 or something? You know, he's breaking 2:07. He's going to be a problem. You know, it's a big improvement for him. He's always been, you know, he's done London, I feel like, every year for the last three or four, and he's been 2:11, 2:12, you know, and this is a massive breakthrough for the guy. So, huge running from him. But yeah, they had a nice group. And yeah, I was just saying about the group of Kajelcha and Tola and Sawe the same, is like what Alistair Cragg and Puma are forming is like everyone is on the same calendar. And I think that's where that's what needs to happen if you're going to get those big performances. You know, everyone is like, okay, we do a half marathon here, we do a marathon in the spring. You know, we do a marathon 6 weeks later, you know, whether it's Boston, London, it doesn't matter, but everyone is working together. And, you know, there's not guys preparing for a track season, you know, within that group. And the poor marathoners, there's two of them on a long run together. You know, they're getting so much more quality just day in, day out. And it's easier for them as well. It's so much easier when there's a group of 10 of you preparing for these things. And I think they have got about 10 men now who are all sort of like, 2:06, 2:05, 2:06, 2:07, like in that sort of ballpark. So what they're forming there, I think that's certainly something you'd want to be involved in.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, I mean, look, yeah, we've got Paddy at 206, Mohammed at 206, Jack Rose at 207, Sesma will be disappointed at 208. Yeah, obviously Gebre Selassie 206, just 206.59. You throw Emil in there, you throw Alex Yee in there, and yeah, British Marathon is looking on the up.
It's looking really good, and Sakala was just doing a bit of homework, and we were talking yesterday, and 15 men broke 2:15 this year. Previously, the most had been 7, and that was in 2025. But before that, 3, 4,
yeah,
each year.
Well, that could get you first
breaking 2:15
before yeah. Super Shoes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, people are popping, but yeah. So yeah, it's double the amount of Brits broke 2:15 this year, which is huge.
Yeah.
And same with, I guess, if you're to use sort of 2:35, is that a fair comparison for the women? 9 broke 2:35, which again is way up, is double on what it has been.
Yeah.
For the women.
It's cool. Yeah. I was just looking at Amanel Petros down there. I remember he was right with one of the front groups for a long time.
He bonked.
Died a bit of a horrible death, but yeah, fair play to him for getting after it.
Mate, do you know what surprises me about, you know, no one's brought up the fact that, Claudio Berardelli, obviously an amazing coach, but there is a little bit of heat on that guy. You know, it was 10 years ago. Wasn't he like caught up in a, yeah, he was cleared of any wrongdoing, you know, to put it straight. And, you know, he wasn't charged of anything at all, but yeah, he was accused of administering EPO to Rita Jeptu. And I think he was arrested. This was in around when I think Federica Rosa was also caught up in all of this. Like this, obviously Rita Jeptu was a Rosa athlete, and I think Rosa went on to fire Claudio Berardelli as well. So like there is a little bit of a like, mate, like how can you get caught up in, you know an athlete he was coaching was heavily banned, was a big doper. So you know, and of course everyone's like, it's amazing Adidas are giving all this money.
I think that to the AIU, dodgy, to be honest.
Genuinely, like, I'm like, it just sounds like a bribe.
It way worse. Yeah,
I think it does.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're like, hey, come like, test me. I'm going to pay you to test me.
It's also, yeah, it's like how much of that is for the testing, how much of that is for ignoring the results. Like, but it's like with Kjeldtjer as well. Obviously spent a number of years with Salazar. And look, so we just don't know, do we?
Hey, so did Mo Farah, so did Galen Rupp.
Like, that's what I mean.
And these guys are...
I don't think that's a good example.
They're legends.
Yeah, they're legends. But yeah, I don't think you're filling the listeners with confidence by throwing those names out there.
No, I'm not. There's always a little bit of skepticism, isn't there? You know, there is a little part of me where, you know, I think I had a lot more faith in the likes of Kipchoge. You know, I just think, but maybe that's just unfair. Like we don't really know.
I think it is.
We don't really know Sarwe as a human, do we? We don't really know his personality. Whereas I think Kipchoge,
yeah.
We felt,
and just because Kipchoge
to.
Could speak in interviews doesn't mean that we should feel any certain way about any athletes.
Mm.
Let's just enjoy the performances, mate.
Yeah, it's enjoying the performances. Yeah, it does. I am like a little bit skeptical, but how can you not in our sport? Mm. You know, I think the last person we saw do something unbelievable was Ruth Chepngetich, and you know, look what happened there, and the writing was on the wall. So from early days, but you know, let's talk about these shoes in 97 grams, mate. I mean, they're absolutely, isn't that the same weight as an OG Vic? I think OG Vics were just under 100, weren't they?
Yeah, but they had no shoe. There was nothing there.
There's nothing there. Flywire.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's cool, isn't it? It's cool. Like, and it's the idea that they deteriorate as well. Like you can only wear them for one race. Like the old Nike Mayflies.
I always think, yeah. It's like I said before, you know, the brands are absolutely loving this. You know, they are.
I saw a cool article though that was talking about how, like, basically Joe Public are going to go out and buy these shoes now, but they're going to be stomping around in them for 6 months. So they're going to be horrendous because these shoes literally have a 42K expiry on them to actually perform, which is why they're so light. But yeah, they're going to be worn for like, I don't know, someone's 100 park runs, and they're just going to be horrendous by the time they're finished with them. So, yeah, that made me chuckle.
Yeah.
they're not the shoes to go and buy unless you're getting free ones for every race.
Yeah. It's funny, they'll look to continue to just push the limits and build the headlines and, you know, say it was all down to them. I think the fueling companies as well.
Do you think you can ever get to the point like, sorry, mate, I'm kind of, but just like Formula One where they're changing shoes?
What, halfway? Because the foam's...
Well, yeah, like the fact that like if you changed quick enough, it would having the new foam would make that enough of a difference that it would be worth stopping for 5 seconds to slip a pair
fucking
of shoes
mate, how fast would they have to be moving to sort of do that? They'd have to be moving at ridiculous speed, absolutely ridiculous speed. Don't think that will ever happen. But, you know, it is a case now where, you know, I do think brands are already working very, very exclusively with athletes, and actually the shoes coming out are more and more personalized to the individual. And I think we're going to see that even more as well, even more. Like, they're going to take someone like Sawe, and that, you know, Adidas's next shoe is going to be based on what can we get this man to do next. You know, can we get another world record out of this guy? Can he break 159? Kipchoge kind of took the headlines really when he broke two, a lot more than Sawe's done on this occasion. I think, you know, people, an amazing result, but I think people will always remember Kipchoge, and Sawe and Kipchoge will be just...
Bless him.
That's the reality of it. I just think that's the reality of it.
Well, it's even Kiblimo. Like, if you'd said to him, yeah, you're going to run 2 hours and 28.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure it'd have taken that.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one's... Yeah. But also, and he was in Alphafly prototypes as well.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, I think Nike made those initial Alphaflies for Kipchoge, right? It was like they knew they were doing a breaking two. That shoe was designed for him. He was going to be the first to wear it. And, you're seeing that more and more with brands as well. So we're realizing the impact of that. But I think on the fueling's an interesting point. These guys are really ramping up their carb intake and obviously bicarb as well, which is a massive aid for them, clearly late on in the race. I mean, when they surge, when they throw down these surges, there seems to be no consequences to it. Even John Courier's 4:30 mile in Boston up the hill, like, yeah, it's probably equivalent to what these guys ran now, 4:12. Like, yeah, he's doing up a massive incline. So that, you know, throwing in these hard-hitting accelerations, it seems to be coping much better than ever, and that's definitely a result of bicarb. But also, these guys are 50 kilos. You know, they're taking 200 grams of carbs on during the race. That's incredible. You know, that's two times. Don't they usually say like you should look to take a gram of carb per kilo body weight per hour or something? But these guys are 2 grams.
Yeah.
These guys are double.
Yeah. I mean, on the fueling as well, I think in the women's race, it was cool to just see how they navigated some of those drink stations. And again, obviously a Sefa in those Adidas shoes as well, winning that in 2:15. But there's a couple times where Mobiri, Jepkoski, Sefa, they're sharing bottles at times that some of them missed it. So they're like, okay, let's have a bottle. But at the same time, Sefa really, really kicked down on one of the drink stations and made a nice move. And she let him come back to her. It was almost like saying, I'm going to make you have a little surge and come back to me. She's just testing the waters a bit. But I thought Mobiri was going to run away with it at one point. It was interesting. She obviously looked like she was working hard, but she looked like that throughout the whole race, and she always does. But it was, yeah, the way I think she threw down that 5:04.
Before SF is too good. You know, you've got someone who's just run just too quick. You know, she is so
too
good,
quick
and
to
when
break, yeah.
yeah, too, and when she's fit and she's had a great build, yeah, you. Like, she's almost untouchable. Like, she's so bloody good. You know, when she gets beat, it's because things haven't gone quite her way. Or, you know, I'm just on a course like London. You know, I think Obiri is amazing on these courses, which throw up a few more challenges. You know, whether it's hills, whether it's heat, whether it's, you know, no pacers. I think Obiri's amazing in those settings. And she's obviously amazing in an all-out foot race, you know, sort of time trial scenario like London. But Asef is better. And that's why she came out on top in the end.
Yeah, and that was Obiri's first paced marathon. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
She's running the Olympics and then two Bostons.
I wonder if she'll go to Berlin next and try and Berlin or, you know, or maybe she'll just hit Chicago and you know, just try and push the boat out on how fast she can run.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, she's already run 2:15 now, but can she go run 2:13, you know, 2:12? Like, where does that, what does that next block look like? What does that next marathon look like?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they missed Paula's course record as well.
It does put into perspective, doesn't it? Like how
cracks
how,
me up. How that is. That's crazy.
But it puts into perspective how bloody good that run was.
Mm.
You know, like we're just talking about, you know, everyone's like, Sawe's got the shoes, he's got the fueling, you know, he's got, you know, he's able to do more training because of the shoes, you know, he's able to do all this, he's a great coach, blah, blah, living altitude. And these women have all of that as well. These are like generational women in the marathon, and Paula's run in fucking hell, it's bonkers.
Yeah.
I know she had those male paces like until the death of the race, but it's unbelievable.
It is. But it proves how quick, I mean, I guess the men's side proves how quick that London course is. So actually, if we did put the women, maybe with some sub-elite men next year.
Look, I think London is quick. The atmosphere is the best marathon that you'll ever see. And I think that's why it's quick. And the conditions were lovely. There was a tailwind. It wasn't too hot. You know, the conditions were absolutely perfect. There are definitely quicker courses out there. But also, you mentioned it, mate, the race. I don't think you find that race that late into a marathon. Chances are, at that speed, obviously, if they're running 204 or something, then you probably will get a race late on. But
sure.
I don't think you'll find a race like that for... I don't think we'll see that for decades. You know, two men coming into that final mile toe for toe running 1:59 pace.
And three women running 2:15 as well. Yeah. Like, on the same day, like the two races. And then, and we spoke about it before. You look at the race for top British women and they're just running on their own. It's just not the...
Poor old Ailish. I mean, we predicted that would happen. She had a nasty blister as well. So actually, it wasn't Ailish's day. Sounds like her build hadn't been. She'd had a few problems in her build as well, which, you know, big setback. It goes back to the question that I said even before. Considering how well she's run over 10K, she seems to, you know, marathon build seems to be quite the challenge. And I'm sure she's going to get it right. But, you know, is there a world where you just continues to do a job on the 10? Like, how far can you push it? Go break 30 minutes. Go. Continue to compete on the track or set national records, set European records on the road, and maybe the half marathon and stuff like that, like the World Road Running Championships. Go do the half marathon there, like really look to feature, you know, go run 66, 65 something. Maybe that's a little bit extreme, but
no, I think I said it last week. I just think there is cross training is great, but you do need to get miles in the legs for a marathon. And Ailish is, one of the ways she's made her career last so long and been so successful is integrating cross training with her training, recognizing that she got injured when she tried to push the miles too much. But 26 miles is just too far to be not like putting in some big miles, like actually on the road in training.
Yeah, and it's those years of being able to I think her mileage is, she is obviously doing more, but
no, but I'm saying that's why she's then breaking down in the build. She can't, whereas on the track she could. Or for a 10K, she could do less and actually she gets into the race in a better place. She's done some quality. And it's also in the race itself, right? You get 20 miles in and you've got 20 miles in your legs that you're not used to.
It's definitely...
The groups that are running like, 10K hard consistently every week.
It kind of goes full circle, you know? We talk about double threshold. I mean, these men are basically just thresholding every day. Speaking of Muhammad there, and it's funny, you know, the guy who created double threshold, or like sort of named it that, Marius Barkan, he spent a lot of his time going to Kenya, and basically he concluded that Kenyans train at threshold without even having to think about training at threshold. Everything they do, you know, a lot of their sessions are naturally threshold sessions. They train at bang on the right intensity because they run to feel so much time and time again. And, you know, they're basically doing really high volume single threshold sessions. And, you know, but obviously for a European.
It's like the old Jeff Seddon steady runs.
I think, you know, the training just kind of, people just start naming it different things, but actually, you know, what these guys are doing is just getting as much in and around race pace as possible. And with the marathon, you can do that. And look at Sessman. Unfortunate day for Sessman. I think, obviously just didn't quite click for him for one reason or another. But I can't help but look at, he's done four marathons in 12 months and three half marathons in 12 months as well. And that's not including all these five and 10Ks, but he's done quite a few 5 and 10Ks in that period as well. in 12 months, four marathons, three half marathons. Is that too much? And is that, you know, because obviously he's in incredible shape, but, you know, do you just...
Only he knows though, right? Or only him and his team know, because the way the tech's changing, it's allowing people to do different things and they're just testing what they can do. We don't know. There's not enough research out there
still
to say...
Still exploring, yeah.
Yeah, and then this is the thing, that the best athletes in the world, like the professional athletes, they're ahead of the physiology research, because the physiology research needs to study these guys in order to come to some conclusions about whether you can do it or not. So if you want to be one of the best, you've got to go and be a bit of a trailblazer and try some things. And it paid off for him in a sense, in the, obviously trying the, because he's only done two builds, hasn't he?
Yeah, because obviously
he's not doing four builds. He's doing one build, then two marathons. So
we say that obviously, like London last year, and then he's done, was it Amsterdam and Valencia? Was it?
Yeah, which is one build.
It was one build, but they were still about eight weeks apart.
Yeah,
which is still like that's a lot to manage. And then obviously this London build, he's done. We did Bath half, he did Berlin half. Like he's done a lot, and I'm just wondering, like, does that just take the sting? Does that take that pop out of the legs a little bit? You know, that when things really started to get hard in London here, he just, for whatever reason, just didn't quite have it. And I would be looking, you know, maybe he will, but.
I think that's why, like, people like in Kipchoge in his prime, like, people admire so much. He's very like a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, you know, I'm going to compete once a year.
Well, but so is Kipchoge, so is Sawe. Like anyone, you know, anyone at top. I mean, I know we saw Kip Lima do the World Cross, but that's 4 months out, or, you know, sort of, I think it's just over, just under 16 weeks out. Yeah. And that's, yeah. And it's so, yeah, I wonder if Sesman will. We'll reflect on that a little bit. My next question, Lum, is going to be, do we need... By the way, obviously, yeah, there were some other great performances. Tuwadi Menges, Alfie Manfort, 2:11:30 on a debut. Great running. Menges, 2:10:48 on his day. Jake Smith, 2:12. Andy Fife, 2:12. Mate, George Grassley wins the mass race, comes steaming through, 2:12. Huge run from him. Guy's an accountant. I mean, they all are. Look, I pull it back to these to the Africa training in large groups. It's what Mark Lloyd are doing. It's what the Cottage lot are doing in Battersea Park. Like the snippets I see, there's 10 of them all training for America. And like, well, I know there's more on a Tuesday night. There's almost 50 of them, 60 of them on a Tuesday night. But, you know, these key marathon sessions, these hard 30Ks, these 5x5Ks, you know, that sort of thing, they're really working together. And it's no surprise that all these guys are running 2:12, 2:11, 2:12, 2:13. Mm. Like, it's no surprise. And I don't know how many sub 220 Belgrave had, but yeah, they looked like they had a lot from what I was seeing on social media and scanning results and stuff. So yeah, credit to everyone down there who's slamming around Battersea Park. And that's where I'm coming from. And they're guys who are working full time. Imagine if none of them were working full time and they were, you know, really just kind of pushing the limits on recovery and what they could do in training. They'd be running 2:08, 2:09. Absolutely no problem. But
it's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool,
so
isn't it? Yeah. Go on, mate. What was your question for me?
Oh, my question for you. Sorry. Yeah, it was initially, do we need an Olympic trial outside of London? Because now we're starting to see, you know, what do we have? Basically, four. Jet Row just missed 207, right? We had four guys in one race. You mentioned Emil. You mentioned Alex Yee. You know, and then there's Jake Smith. There's Mark Scott. There's Callum Hawke. There's other guys to bring into the fold, let alone, look, you know, are we going to see Rory Leonard step up? Ellis Cross obviously wasn't there. I think for a lot of people in general watching this race, but professional Brits, they look at the marathon and go, it's almost becoming the, look, we love the 1500, but it's almost becoming the blue ribbon event. And, you know, because of the money that it brings in as an athlete, the brand excitement, the kudos you get in your community. Your status as a runner seems to be higher if you're a marathon runner. Like, even if you run 2:11, 2:10, 2:11, which actually at the moment when the elites are running 11, 12 minutes quicker than you, you know, you're still not a professional. But the status you are as a runner, I think, means more than someone who's run 13:40 on the track for 5,000. Even though I would say 13:40 on the track for 5,000 is a harder achievement than 2:11.
Agree.
Yeah, but like, that's what I'm saying. Do we need an Olympic trial? Because
of course we do. I think to grow the sport and to incentivize people to compete, and want to win races. And you talk about all these good athletes, it then means that if you're British Marathon champion, that's a big deal. Like, you know my opinion on it, mate. I always think we should celebrate people being British champions, and that should be something to go into the season and say, yeah, I want to win the British Marathon title this year, proper, in a proper separate race. And it was, mate, the COVID one was amazing in Kew Gardens.
It was fun. It was fun to watch.
Like, people loved it.
That's what I mean. Like, would
we could also give
is
30 guys and 30 girls the elite treatment.
Yeah.
Because it's
Brits. Yeah. But we had 15 runs sub 215. So I think if everyone comes together on the same day, I don't think we'd have, I think we could have 25, 30 men who are sub 215 by the time 2028 rolls around.
Yeah.
I've got no doubts about that. But the problem is there would be absolutely zero point in having a trial if they do the whole top one is auto, everyone else is a lucky dip. I mean, that would be just dreadful. So the only way the trial works for me is if they just go top three across the line, off you go, as long as your ranking or your time is close enough.
They scrap that, in my opinion, to be honest. I just don't have a time.
Well, no, I think the time's set from World Athletics and the IOC.
Yeah, but we would make it quicker, that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
we're not taking three unless they've all run 203.
Yeah. Well, obviously. You know, it was 2:630, wasn't it? What's it going to go to? I think 2028.
It has to, like, in line with all the other events, and this is what we always say, like, it needs to go quicker. If you're running 1:59 at the front, then...
Well, they were running 2 hours. I think it will stay at 2:630, but...
Be like, I think it should just be like the Champions League, and there should be no time things. Like, the nations should get a certain amount of spots.
Mm-hmm.
Based off how they perform in previous
maybe like 50 Kenyans, 50 Ethiopians.
No, to a point though, so they can have four. The Kenyans should be able to have four or five.
Yeah.
In certain events. Yeah. Like, we should get five in a 1500.
Mm.
In the men's 15. Or whatever it is. And then there should be no time at all, and then we should have first five at the trials in the 15, then go to the Olympics or whatever we qualify with.
I'm a big supporter, it's just not even time racing.
we've broken all the barriers now. There's no more barriers to break. There actually isn't. But what is left, like, they're not going to break 60 seconds in the 800, right?
Yeah, I guess, like, on the women's
they're not going to break 3 minutes in the 15.
I know
they're not going to.
It's the 4 minute mile for the women. The 4 minute mile for the women is probably the last barrier. It's the only race worth timing.
Or Project 222.
Project 222, but yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus. So that's a legit question. Talking to British Trials, there's been some, I think the entries are hotting up for the 10K on the 17th at Loughborough International. I think they're opening it up. We're trying to get the best field together possible. Heard some rumours. I don't know if I can say anyone just yet. Maybe we'll give it another week. We'll give it till next week, because then we'll be basically previewing that race anyway. So, but I think that's going to be a good old ding dong. But unfortunately, only the top one's guaranteed. And so it will mean that the win is really important, but it is also a bit of a shame for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Mate, I've actually got a couple more blind rankings for you. You know, I've been quite enjoying just putting them together, seeing what you think. Well, I've got two, and we'll do one of them next week. I've got an NCAA cross winners or a Streets Won't Forget full 10 for you. Which one do you want?
NCAA cross winners, man.
NCAA cross winners. Mate, before we start, how's your Go Ward going, mate? Before we do them.
No, do you know what? It's the more I've been using it, actually, I've been enjoying it more. It's just purely from the fact that it starts to get to know you, mate. AI is a funny thing. I feel like I've got a friend in GoWard. But, like, it's starting to really just get to know my weaknesses and personalizing what actually I need to do. And this is all, you know, like I said, I don't know how they come to the conclusion of ranking your or sort of measuring your stretch score, but it's all to do with just improving certain areas in your stretch score. I mentioned right at the start, my posterior chain was awful, but yeah. And actually you start to feel, I've always said this anyway, like the more flexible you get, the more sort of just mobile you get through all areas of the body, you're better at determining what's wrong with you and how to target it. You know, for example, if you feel just loose day to day and then you get the odd ache and the odd pain, you're like, okay, I need to trigger that area. I need to go work on that area. And you're just a lot more in tune with how to sort your body out and how to take care of your body. And I think that's, you know, the understanding that it's given me of my body, but also just in general, like everyone's, you know, anatomy, I think is a big advantage. So I'm enjoying it. I'm on a very, very, very personalized plan now. So,
what do you have your sports app, mate? Because that's what I think is cool as well. Is like a lot
15
of
15 minutes a day.
Yeah, a lot of people obviously listening to this, like we're all runners, right? But a lot of people are doing a bit of five-a-side, some paddle, golf, whatever it is alongside, and you can add those sports in as well, and it kind of helps to target and personalize for you doing some of those stuff as well. You got swimming on there, literally anything you could.
Well,
think
this
of.
Is it. You know, I've been going to the Arm Farm a lot more recently, and I've been working on my paddle game. And seems no coincidence, ever since I started Go Wod, my paddle game seems to be really. I'm getting to shots I would never get to before.
You good, are you? You decent.
You know, I guess you're only as good as the people you play, but I seem to win every game.
Just playing against Catherine?
No, it's... I play against my brother, Dunbar, Ben. I mean, we had a good tournament one time and seemed to win every game there. So I guess I just need to find tougher opponents at the moment.
Yeah. There you go, mate. Right. Talking of tough opponents... NCAA cross winners, right? So top 10 for you. Let's
come
go.
In.
Sam Chilanga.
Yeah, mate. Let me guess the year. 2009 against Rupp. Or was it 2008 against Rupp, maybe? Chilanga and Rupp.
I've not written it down. So I can guess,
that race.
But I'd be just lying.
Rupp's wearing a tank top underneath his Oregon vest. He's got the nose strip on. Mate, Sam Chilanga, yep. Okay, solid number five.
Yeah. So he's a nice start, isn't it? Number five. Pat Tiernan.
It was bittersweet for us when Tiernan won that race, because it was like the end of Chez's era, but also it was like, oh my God, someone's beat Chez. No one had done that in three years.
And the Sweat Elite.
And it was when Sweat Elite was like, this is kind of pre-Strava, right? No one was on Strava.
Yeah.
Tiernan was sharing his training, mate, at the Villanova. And yeah, to be fair, that was huge. That was a big race. Was that Kentucky? I think that was on the Kentucky course. Mate, I'm going to go six, though. There's some big dogs in there.
That's a bit cool. Oh, you don't know. You don't know. Connor Mance.
I love the guy. Great runner, but he's never really sort of fired me up and inspired me.
He's too recent, I think.
I respect what he does, and I respect how he races, but I'm like, yeah, he just hasn't quite inspired me enough. So I think I'm going to put Connor Mance at number seven.
Justin Knight.
Yeah, goat, mate. Oh, easy. Three.
Okay, I love it.
He's coming back as well. Jerry's working an absolute treat on Justin Knight. I think 2027 and 2028, you're going to see glimpses of him this year back to his best. And I think 27, 28, he's going to be there.
Dathan Ritsenhain, Colorado days.
Yeah, man. Was this when he beat our man Ryan Hall? Did he beat him? Or did Ryan Hall, did they have a race?
I'm pretty sure they had
like a good ding dong, but yeah, I was always a Ryan Hall fan. I'm going to put Ritsenhain further back, eight.
Ryan Hall next.
Yeah, okay. Ryan Hall, number, did I put Knight number three?
Yeah.
I'll put Ryan Hall number four. I'll put him number four. Okay. Yeah.
Lowie Lalanne. Mate, I enjoyed putting this together. To be fair, I was going through the list.
Yeah. Fuck.
It's your list, mate. It's your list. Yeah. Don't worry. You've used.
You got Kennedy Katuka to come.
I'm not saying.
I've got two and one left. I think. Yeah, I've got two.
You've got
left.
Two,
yeah.
One.
Yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
Nine and ten.
Yeah, nine and ten. I mean, Lowie was, go watch the workout, him and Bernard Lagat on the golf course, just running six. Ah, it's a thing of beauty.
Mate, some of the stuff's gone on Flowtrack, you know.
Really?
I tried to watch the, my favorite ever comms, you know, the one with Chez, Kathuka, Lalanne.
Yeah.
In the, Chez's in the 10K. First year. It's like, this video's not found.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And Mohamed in the race. Yeah, and it's not on there, so I'm going to need to source that from somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in the archive somewhere. But I also remember like seeing Lagat do, they used to do these uphill tempos, didn't they? These 5 mile uphill tempos, and Lowie Lalanne would just take Lagat to the cleaners.
Yeah.
I think I was a year
ago.
Lagat
wearing like the basketball style vest.
Yeah. Oh, mate, the tank.
Yeah.
Mate, Lalanne was big G. I'm going to put him number two.
Who do I give you next? Goucher.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's a shame. He's going to have to sink further down the charts, but it was, yeah, I've put him 9, but obviously, yeah, running with the Buffaloes. Insane book.
Yeah.
But I never saw him do that.
Kennedy Kathuka.
Yeah, we used to love that guy. But yeah, number 10 for the Kathuka. I just assume Chez is coming.
Yeah, and
Chez goes number one. And I think as well with Chez, it was just the battles he had each year. It was a bit like when Bekele was in his prime.
It's different people attacking each year.
That, I think that's what's... And it's the same with Farah. You know, we spoke about Farah. You know?
Yeah.
It's fun when you get the same guy and it's like, yeah, different contenders are trying to knock him
off.
And
he had the sidekick as well because Chez had... what's his name?
Jenkins.
Chez had Eric Jenkins and Farah had Rupp and it was... Was when they're all based in Oregon as well. I mean, you were like, surely, yeah. Chez and Jenkins both go NOP.
We're going,
and they just replace them. And then
Chez
Sketches messed it all up.
Yeah, Sketches did actually fuck it.
They ruined the legacy because I think they would have just gone on and they'd have just taken over from Farah and Rupp on the world stage if they'd trained together under Salazar. I guess Salazar also fucked it up a little bit.
The thing is, though,
we could blame him.
There's a part of me where Chez was a serial racer and that's why he loved the NCAA. And I don't think he could, that transition to become, because there's a transition where you're in the NCAA, then you actually need to start running really fast and then you can race again at the highest level. I think he struggled. Also, the whole US citizenship, that screwed him over. Yeah.
Yeah, because if he'd had the opportunity, like, say, Hocker had, like, to go to a champs while in the NCAA, that'd have been cool. I remember I went to... Me and my brother went to London Diamond League last minute because we found out Chez was running. And then he obviously was just nowhere.
When was that? Yeah, where did he come? Like last in the 5K?
Yeah, Farah did it. It was good. It was like worth going. But we literally got tickets on the day because we were like, oh, apparently Chez is dead.
Mate, you're not getting tickets on the day anymore. Like London Diamond League will be...
It was like, Friday night, 5K. So there you go. So you've gone Chez, Lalang, Justin Knight, Ryan Hall, Sam Chalanga, Pat Tiernan, Connor Mance, Dathan Ritsenhine, Goucher, and Kathuka. Yeah, I think apart from Goucher, you've not done a bad job there.
Yeah. No Charles Hicks.
Nah. I didn't. I kind of stuck to I guess, Hampton, the Samuel, me and you used to
blanks,
watch.
Thanks. No, I know. That was... Yeah,
maybe if we were going 1 to 30.
We were religious NCAA consumers then. But, mate, I think that wraps up London Marathon. What an incredible race on the weekend. I think London is untouchable. It is goated, and I think it will be 2 days next year, just given the demand. I guess these ballot figures are going to come out, right? I don't know when the ballot closes, in the next month or in the next couple months. I remember last year we found out pretty quick after that, hey, 1.1 million people have tried to be in this thing. And so whenever that closes, that number is going to be...
I think more people will try because they think they've got more chance.
Absolutely. But also just watching it, just watching it. And how do you think, you know, another question, another debate probably for another day is like how this is influencing the younger generation. Like if you're a 15-year-old kid watching this, I think you're starting to naturally become inspired and be attracted to the roads possibly more than you are to track. And you know, I don't know for sure, that's just me going on just sort of like gut feeling, but I just picture myself being that age and seeing how there is so much recognition for what people do in a marathon now. And it's even if you've, you know, if you've got someone at your local club running 220, like they're almost like these gods, you know. It's just, they just carry a bit more aura. And I just wonder, you know, those youngsters coming through are 15, 16, 17, and they're already thinking about, I can't wait to do this. You know, I can't wait to run a marathon. I can't wait to do a half marathon. I can't wait to do a 10. And that appeal is there versus like, okay, what can I do over 1500 for the next 15 years?
No, I think so. But I think things like parkrun have increased that anyway.
And parkrun have massively increased.
Because people growing up in athletics actually run a 5K now. Like, when did you run your first 5K?
Oh mate,
I was all parkrun.
I was post uni.
In uni, yeah. Like people didn't used to do them. We used to run.
I remember we used to do
a 3K youth development league. McCain, what were they called?
I did my first parkrun.
ALs.
Yeah.
EK, and I'd be like, "Whoa, it's long distance now."
I didn't even do that, mate. I did do a 3K. I did a couple threes when I was younger, to be fair. But yeah, I remember we did our first parkrun at uni, didn't we? With with the group, and it was just a race, and it was horrible.
We used to do 20-minute tempos.
Yeah,
in first year at uni.
Yeah, yeah. And even
and
that
just stopped
was like
20 minutes.
That was 5 minutes too far.
But yeah. The thing is, when you're wearing streak LTs, that was like pretty tough on the legs.
It was more the way we used to do it, though. It'd be like, right,
5 minutes, and then
5 minutes, 5:30, 6 minutes, 6:30. Yeah.
No, you'd have a bit of a kick at the end. You'd have a bit of a...
Yeah, only the last 200. Yeah, you would rally. Maybe. You would rally. But no, and I reckon we are going to see a world where more and more, almost under 23s, will think about debuting a marathon. I really
Mate, they need to have a Bucks marathon. That's what they need. I think they do. I think technically, rumors about they, Bucks, used to, Bucks they used to have race. Something.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I think that's going to be the next step. Because also, if you are... Like I say, you're out in... Yeah, you're trying to make it as a professional. You've run 13:15 for 5K. You're absolutely flying. You're shit hot. But if you could go and run 2:8, 2:7, which you probably could if you're running 13:15. Obviously, you need to be very, very strong and have enough mileage in your legs. But you're probably gonna be financially better off.
Yeah,
and you're gonna be
especially if you can like share it on Instagram and YouTube. And...
Yeah, I just look at the hype though. The week of London. You look at, and even after, but you look at the hype going in for all of these athletes. And like, they're the face, you know, like Puma Boys, they're the face of the brand for a week. Mm. You know, they're going in, they're being introduced to all these people. They don't get that.
Go
when
to the flagship store.
Man, you don't get that when you go to the World Championships.
No,
you know,
you
go to base camp, no one bothers you, you're in.
It's also the amount of races they get to do where they get to run, or high profile races where they get to wear
high
like
profile,
a Puma
yeah.
kit, rather than For most athletes, because you don't get in a Diamond League, right? Your big race is the Olympics, and then you're wearing a Nike GB kit anyway. So hard to, unless you're Josh Kerr and you actually win, and then the cameras are on you, and you've got your Brooks spikes around your neck and covering the Nike swoosh.
Mm.
You can't do that. Whereas Jack Rowe, Paddy Deaver, they get 2 hours running around London in Puma kit.
Yeah. Yeah, and the shoes, and any time they do something special, it's the shoes, it's the shoes, it's the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There we go. Well, so, times are changing.
Wraps us up.
I mean, times
Another
have
year.
Changed. Yeah. Yeah.
Another year. Maybe we'll do one in a couple of years. Who knows?
Well, I knew it was special when I was feeling inspired to enter a marathon myself.
Yeah.
I was
We'd
like,
Madrid,
if
though, wouldn't we? More purist.
Oh, yeah. I'd need to tackle the hills. You know, I'd need to make it as hard as possible.
Hey, what's the one you were trying to get me to do?
25 degrees.
You were trying to get me to do... Matt was trying to talk me into doing... Abingdon.
Because, no, my point of that was you need to get... You just can't get in London unless you get the championship. So we would have to go and run fucking 250 or 245 or whatever the championship is now.
Hey, sports shoes might have to give us some of them Adidas shoes. if we're going to try and do that.
Yeah, some Pro Evo 3. Yeah, if we're to run London, like that seems to be the only way, like... You know, you can try and get a ballot. I think the minimum.
You get the half time though. The half time's
71:30, which again is a push, you know. So come on,
it's not long till we're good for age.
Let's talk with Alex Donald and let's get in Cardiff half.
Yeah, there we go. Right. Thanks for listening to us, guys. If you did race on Sunday, well done to you. I hope you enjoyed it. And yeah, we'll catch you guys very, very soon.